commit our crimes. It's unfair in that sense to drag the Multnomah County defendant clear across the state where he's got no friends and doesn't know anybody and is the victim of a righteous prosecutor over there who is bent on the 100% conviction rate.
Like taking Clay Shaw out of Dallas and making him stand trial there.
Near Lakeview, another county seat. And the Section 8, by the way, reflects what now is current case law. No law in Oregon on most of this. But conspiracy to rob the bank includes the obtaining of the gun by breaking into the store and the stealing of a car to be used as a getaway car. It's only one conspiracy. It's not conspiracy to break and enter the store, conspiracy to steal, and conspiracy to rob the bank.
How about the theory of social justice you were talking about before? Of the person, it would seem to me to be consistently with convicted an individual involved in multiple crimes with multiple sentences. Now we're turning around and saying that he's no more of a threat because he commits 50 burglaries as a result of one conspiracy than he is if he only did one.
Well, we can reach him though beside conspiracy. He actually does burgle a store. He can be reached for the substantive crime.
Well, say he plans to attempt burgle 50 stores. And he's punished no more heavily than the man who burgles only one, which seems to be inconsistent with your prior theory. I don't disagree with this one. It's a good theory.
You're just accusing me of being inconsistent. All right, I know.
Consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds.
Yeah, that's right, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what Senator Lane says.
What does this do to the conspiracy to conceal? You remember the Grunewald and all those cases where they had all kinds of problems. We haven't run into the state practice very much, but what does this do to that area, if anything? Maybe it just leaves it alone.
It does it. No, it settles it, and I wish I could tell you how. I can't remember.
What's the problem? I don't
know. All those cases that where they had a big hoorah.
It overturns that. It overrules that kind of situation.
They either from a statute of limitations or some other point, they couldn't nick them for the original conspiracy, so they extended the statute of limitations by including a conspiracy to conceal it, like the tax fixing conspiracies and so on.
Yeah, it's a fiction, in other words. The crime had been committed, but they're going to say...
The crime had been committed to let taxpayers off the hook easily, and the statute had run on that. So then they got under the tent by alleging a conspiracy to conceal the commission of it and to prevent the apprehension of it and so forth.
Yeah, and another way it comes up is for the purpose of using hearsay evidence. The statement is made after the crime has been, the conspired crime has been committed, but the damning hearsay evidence exists after that point. So they say, well, the conspiracy continued to conceal the crime that had been committed, and therefore the hearsay can come in. This would stop that by defining duration of the conspiracy. For purposes of the application of the statute of limitations, for instance, conspiracy is a continuing course of conduct which terminates when the crime or crimes which are the object are committed or the agreement that they be committed is abandoned. So when the crime is committed, it's all over as far as the conspiracy goes.
Any other questions on 7 or 8? I think these late evening meetings are good times to discuss it. Everybody's so tired they don't have any questions.
Yeah. There's a couple of cases.
I don't really see where Section 8 is actually necessary.
Well, it is, and it's because there are cases on both sides. It does cause trouble otherwise, because the prosecutor is going to bring conspiracy in multiple counts for the same course of conduct, and it has happened. And the I think that this reflects the present status in the municipal courts, that the course of conduct is one conspiracy and not a series of conspiracies, or the criminal conduct, although a series of violations of the same statute, is not a series of conspiracies to violate the same statute. It looks at it as one course of conduct and one conspiracy.
In other words, if you had some stolen payroll checks, and intent was to pass these checks.
Right, the conspiracy is to pass them. It's not to pass check one and then a conspiracy to pass check two, because actually that makes the punishment cumulative. Very and really, it's unjust in the sense that for every check, it's a separate conspiracy, when in fact it's not a separate conspiracy.
Well, I tried to convince the Supreme Court of this theory, but couldn't do it in a case where I had a corroborating of an accomplice on passing a series of checks. I could corroborate her testimony on one back here, but no check was actually passed there, but I could get him identified as being what she tried to pass on. So I tried to argue that the passing of fraudulent checks is a continuing conspiracy of going ahead, you know, all one transaction. And so I had corroborated her testimony by tying him in with this conspiracy, and the Supreme Court wouldn't buy that argument, but they crossed back on my second or third argument about that he lied in denying that he even associated with her, and
said that
it was sufficiently corroborated. And
you made too many good arguments then.
True, but this is the easiest thing would have been for him to say, well, the passing of checks is a continuing transaction, and that I tied her in with this continuous action, and therefore
they didn't really write that opinion though in conspiracy terms.
No.
So we're not stuck with what you feel is bad law.
No, but I mean, I'd say that I tried to convince at least our Supreme Court that there was such a thing as a continuing conspiracy and a series of acts, and they wouldn't buy it.
Or they may have felt that if they did buy it, it'd create more headaches, and they'd create less headaches with
maybe
with this. That's the one where he lied, and that made the jury question on the. That's just a recent case, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a Carroll case.
Good case.
Yeah, they affirmed the case, but they really didn't.
You didn't do it the right way, and you're still mad at him.
Well, no, they didn't make it in such a way that it's really authority for anything.
I was always glad enough to win a case.
That's right. Well, sometimes it's best to come out of the Supreme Court without having the authority.
I was very glad of this case because we argued it, and I was sure that I was down the tube, and I'd even offered before we tried the case to let him plead to aiding and abetting NSF and everything else. They argued it and they asked for re-argument, had to argue it the second time. Don't you get those shotgun arguments? You know, anything to hang your hat.
What about section 9?
Right, here's the procedural aspect of the law of conspiracy, which I think is just essential to a complete definition of the crime, and that's why it's here. Here again, this is an attempt to balance the interests of the state when faced with the complicated, very complicated in some cases, conspiracy, and the bad condition that the defendant can be in if in fact he's one of 40 or 50 or 100 little fish in this big net that the state has thrown out. Because, as I've indicated here in the comment, the defendant tends to get lost in this, and the jury is willing to agree that he's a bird of a feather, and therefore he must be guilty with the rest of them in the big, broad picture that's being painted by the state. But at the same time, the state has got to have the authority, because of the nature of the crime, to join, to have a joinder which is much more liberal than the usual kind, and to have continuance of the hearsay exceptions on evidence. And this does not restrict the hearsay rule, except that it does try to balance out the joinder provisions as between the state and the defendant, and allows the court, when all is said and done, if the court feels it's fair to give a severance, it may do so on the motion of an individual defendant. So there is a flexibility built into the system as well.
What? There really isn't any criteria set in this section 2 except for the fact that the defendant requests it. And just simply an affidavit that's going to be necessary and appropriate to a fair determination of his guilt or innocence. And you say the court shall order a severance. Which.
Well, may perhaps would be a better word, because it is discretionary all the way.
Because under this, it's just simply going to be a motion for a severance and an affidavit they need to be fair to him, and the court would have to grant it, probably.
Before we get to severance, I have some questions on Section 1. As I read it, A and B conspire, allegedly conspire, they can be prosecuted jointly, mm-hmm. barring a severance.
Right.
And also, if A and B conspire, and C and D conspire, then all four of them can be prosecuted together, provided that the conspiracies are so related that they constitute different aspects, and so forth.
Right.
Mean.
Right.
Now, isn't this, in fact, a substantial enlargement of the present federal law of conspiracy?
It may be, but it has a balancing factor built in. For instance, the important thing here would be the hearsay evidence, perhaps, of the C and D conspiracy, A and B not conspiring with them, but the same kind of conspiracy. A and B may not, the state may not use against A and B the hearsay evidence from C and D's conspiracy. There is that limit to balance out with the
defendant. How do they keep it out?
Up to the court. Well, that's a hard thing to manage.
Well,
these kind of
under the recent cases of the Supreme Court that say you can't even try two defendants together jointly if you're going to use separate confessions against each of them, because the jury no longer is competent to segregate the confessions. You've got to try them separately.
Those aren't conspiracy cases, though.
No, because you see, if A and B are tried, say, for burglary, and after they're caught, they both give confessions. Well, or say one of them gives a confession. Now you can no longer try, the court used to instruct, now you can only use A's confession as against A. You can't use it against B at all. But now you can't do that. You've got to try it in two separate trials if you're going to use statements from either of them. And so you'd be put in the same position under those type of cases, in this type of situation, where you would be using evidence only admissible against one or two of them and not the others. You wouldn't be able to try them together. Unless your evidence admissible is going to be admissible against all of them, you're not going to be able to try them together.
Of course, the thing that bothers me about this is that you read those conspiracy cases and you go through these conspiracy trials, in particular, it's been in federal court, not really very often in state court, but federal court, and they get anywhere from 6 to 20 guys in there, and boy, it's just a devil take the hindmost.
Yeah, well, these are restrictive on some of those federal case holdings.
Subsection B, as I read it, right now, I'm not aware that you can jointly prosecute A, B, C, and D unless there's an allegation in the indictment that all of them were members of the same conspiracy.
Well, you may be right.
You'd have to allege that they were acting together in pursuance of a common intent or something.
Well, but yeah. Or that they were conspirators. Mm-hmm. But B would permit you to prosecute A and B, C and D, even though A and B's conspiracy was different from C and D's conspiracy.
Well, I don't think you could under this. There's got to be some.
That's what it says, provided that the conspiracies are so related that they constitute different aspects of a scheme of organized criminal conduct.
I think the explanation of that, I can give an example of the Bruno case, which is a leading federal case. That's a case where we had three groups of people, the importers of the dope in New York, the wholesalers in New York, who distributed to retailers, one group in Texas and one group in Louisiana, as I recall. Each retail group had salesmen that pushed it in their local communities. As I recall, the case is Bruno, and they convicted the whole batch, 85 defendants, including the smugglers and the salesmen on the other end. Well, the model penal code says that's too much. That's too broad a power for the prosecution. It lumps together too many people who really didn't conspire with each other. By definition of the model penal code, then, it would show that the smugglers knew that the wholesalers would have retailers. So therefore, they could be said to have conspired all the way if they were the smugglers. They could be gotten in on everybody. But the salesmen or the retailers on the other end could not be said to have had the purpose when they bought from the wholesalers to conspire with a particular smugglers group. Now, it's in a sense, it's a shifting kind of concept, but not the point is that not everybody has the same purpose of conspiracy within this huge group. Model Penal Code would tend to limit the conspiracy purpose, but in the Bruno case, it might reach the same result by saying smugglers and wholesalers are conspiring with each other, but not with the retailers. But the retailers are conspiring with the wholesalers, and it's the same course of criminal conduct, but in a different aspect. Therefore, we'll join them, it's a separate conspiracy, but we'll join them and try them together, because we can't show the jury the whole picture unless we do. But the code then says that the hearsay evidence of the retailers can't be used against the wholesalers or the smugglers, and vice versa. You can't enlarge the rights of hearsay evidence and admissions against by simply enlarging the joinder.
But the very vice of the conspiracy prosecution is that it comes in, and you can just, as Justice Jackson said in the Kulovich case, is that, hell, after 6 weeks, they don't remember that when he says, yeah, he knew it was, that it didn't apply, to only applied to A, it didn't apply to B, C, and D. And that's the very vice of the conspiracy trial.
It's impossible for a judge to manage, I guess, really, isn't it?
Well,
the stuff that's coming in.
I've had a lot of long conversations with Sidney Lezak over this very point, because this is basically the disadvantages of a conspiracy situation show up in federal court rather than state court. And until recently, until the last 7 years, conspiracy trials were fairly frequent in federal court. I don't mean they're every month or so, but maybe once or twice a year you'd have a great big deal. And they are almost impossible to defend. And even in cases where you know there's some little fish or even some innocent fish that are in the fishbowl with them. And of course the prosecutor argues, well, the only way you can do it is try them all together, but you give the judge power to sever. The fact of the business is there hasn't been a severance, and there was a severance up in Tacoma when they tried Ruben Lenski here about 10 or 12 years ago. There hasn't been a severance in federal court in Portland for, I'll bet you, 25 years, because the judges, as a practical matter, never grant the severance. And you have
Well, of course, that's under the federal rule that has such a big unending chain in this purpose to conspire. If, in fact, there is an end to that, by definition, then the federal judge might have much better grounds and feel much more secure about granting some severance. We do try to limit, by definition, the persons within the conspiracy that the federal courts do not now limit. Federal law doesn't limit.
What do you mean when you say neither the liability of any defendant and so forth shall be enlarged by such joinder? What are you trying to say there? Is that your restrictive language on hearsay?
Yeah, that's the restriction on the hearsay. And I grant you, the practical problem may make that meaningless, but we're talking about a pretty rare exception, I guess, in those huge conspiracies, especially in the state court.
I really think when you start thinking of conspiracy, really, to a certain extent, you're thinking about organized crime.
That's right.
And I don't know, has there ever been a time in the state of Oregon where they really
there will be
gone at them in a real conspiracy fashion? It's usually been
there were a number of
picking at one, two, like this. In the vice trials up there, they tried to grab a whole bunch all at once and lost every one of them.
There were a number of conspiracy indictments in the vice investigation. There's a lot of reasons why that thing came to not very much, and I don't think the fact that they had conspiracy indictments was a significant factor in making it a bust kind of a situation. Well, I have this feeling that I hate like the Dickens to enlarge it, although I agree if you get into the mafia type situation, I think you probably need this type.
Well, I don't think we've reached that yet from what I hear, but after all, when you look at the number of people coming to the Willamette Valley, the mafia is going to be noticing things like that too, and sooner or later we're going to have infiltration of the mob and the organized crime, and Portland is going to be too good a market to pass by, you know, it's just inevitable with urbanization, I think. Might as well be ready for it when it comes. May never use this stuff the way it is.
What about the venue section?
Well, this is designed to again reflect hauling the fellow across the state to try him with people with whom he never had the purpose to conspire. The definition then, again, going back to the definition of what the conspiracy is, the purpose either with the person you conspire with or others whom you know that person will conspire with. If they then carry that chain on beyond those restrictions, and the act is committed in a faraway county somewhere, they can't haul you over there to try you in that conspiracy because you haven't conspired with those people. Try you back here in Multnomah County.
You say charged. Shouldn't you say tried?
Where, Judge?
Section 3.
Yeah.
No defendant shall be charged with a conspiracy. Aren't you really saying no defendant shall be tried? Isn't that what your meaning is?
Yeah. I guess there's really no reason to say charge.
Charge is an ambiguous. Does that
Wouldn't
mean it
be
has
better
to be
to put it in more of a positive term, like rather no defendant shall be charged, say that the venue shall be in any county in which a conspiracy was entered into, in which an overt act and venue shall lie, or something like that, rather than saying no defendant shall be either using the word charged or
tried.
Then
you
shall lie in any
only
county in which
you can do it that way.
Only.
Yeah, it could be stated positively.
Well, what you're saying here is if Dave and I conspire in Multnomah County to burglarize banks in Malheur County. I can't be tried in Malheur County.
Yes, you can, because you conspired with people knowingly to commit that crime in Malheur County. I think under the draft you could be, but if the people with whom you conspired knowingly then conspire with people perhaps to steal cars, or do some other crime in what's Ontario?
Malheur.
Well, okay, another county. then the conspiracy that you entered into for purposes of venue doesn't extend to that other county, because you really haven't conspired with those people under the definition of the conspiracy. Here again, subject to the knowing that what is expecting what you'll do if I conspire with you with someone else, that you're going to go get somebody else. But it's the somebody else conspiring on into the future, into a different relationship, that this definition is attempts to
really
control.
What George is worried about is somebody being dragged across the state to stand trial in a county where he didn't expect to, but as a practical matter, it's the DA's saying, well, you try him there, and he's saying, no, you try him over there. That's the practical part of this situation when you've got a multiple venue possibility. Just like up in Portland, that murder trial where the wife and the boyfriend killed the husband, there was a heck of a lot of dickering going on between Multnomah and Clackamas County as to who was going to try that thing.
Actually,
the Caffarelli case.
Boy, that was where the case was won and lost as far as Clackamas County was concerned, and make them try it in Multnomah County.
I don't think this is really going to, the problem that I suggest that it is here. This, again, is kind of reflective of the federal rules, where it really makes a difference with respect to venue. Instead of being tried in Louisiana federal court, they haul you up into Connecticut somewhere, or up in the Maine. It's possible. The federal jurisdictions are really spread out. Well, here in this county, you couldn't really probably be in too much trouble if you got hauled far away anyhow. So I suppose this is more reflective of the kind of federal conspiracies, again, rather than the state, on the state level. But still, there is an end, by definition here, to how far you can take that defendant.
Any other questions about Section 9?
Well, I'd like to make one observation on this, and that's just from the standpoint of our overall revision project, and that is that we anticipate this substantive code, when it's ready, will be presented to the legislature before we do anything on procedure. And I was wondering if you felt that in connection with this, assuming that we wanted to accept this, that we want to examine the present joinder provisions under 136. if we want to write in a rider to this to amend that at the time we present this, because that provides, 136.060 provides for separate trials if they want it. And that talks in terms of when two or more defendants are jointly indicted for a felony, which would include a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Whether we have to, I'm not so sure we have to worry about that problem at this stage of things, but I think we should keep it in mind.
I think we ought to footnote it.
Yeah, anytime you start sticking procedure in, you're getting into problems that we aren't trying to cope with yet.
We've done it in the responsibility section.
Yeah. But it is, it's almost inseparable.
It's a little different there in the insanity situation, because you don't have any general procedural provisions to cover.
Right. There is one here.
Well, we better stick a note in the commentary that this is a problem we have to deal with.
What is it? 136? So, what was it?
I would like to move that Section 3, Part 3 of Section 9 be changed to read, saying a venue shall lie in the county in which the conspiracy is entered into, or in any county which an overt act pursuant to such conspiracy was done by him.
Okay, I'll state it positively.
Okay. Any objection to that?
Okay. Did you get that, Maxine?
Section 10 is renunciation, and I take it this is in the same. This is the same format.
Yeah, this has got the added. Let's see.
George, I have a question on this. See, thwarted the success of the conspiracy, line 3, this would be the renunciation. Mm-hmm. We are here then getting away from thwarting the commission of the crime for which the conspiracy was originally.
No, I'm not intending to.
Well,
thwarting
back
the success
to the
of the conspiracy
of
means that whatever they were going to set out to do, they can't do.
Well, I noticed in the commentary that's what you said it said, but it doesn't say it to me. So we look at the success of the conspiracy.
And conspiracy, section 6, is the agreement to promote or facilitate the commission of a crime. If you have five conspirators, two of them say, no, we don't want to. We aren't going to drive the getaway car and be the lookout before the commission of the act, but the other three go ahead and commit the act. Are those two, have they successfully renounced?
No.
Yeah.
Well, at least that's the intent.
Am I reading more of the words toward the success of the conspiracy than I should then?
Well,
doesn't the footnote, the commentary make it clear though?
Yes, it does, but I don't think the section makes it clear.
Well, would you feel better if we say something like thwarted the commission of the crime or crimes which were the object of the conspiracy?
Yes.
That'd be all right with me.
Because that's the purpose of what you're saying.
That's right.
Apparently.
That's right. That's a little awkward to say, but I think I could work it out.
Other than that, it's the same thing as renunciation. Dissertation.
Now, if one guy backs out, he's going to have to stop the commission of the crime before he's home free, right?
Yeah, but he might get the event. He might get the statute of limitations running with respect to himself. He's still guilty of conspiracy, but if he gets out, if he announces to his other friends, I'm getting out, that's abandonment. And here we get a difference in the word abandonment and renunciation. It's a partial defense in this case, abandonment, but it's not going to excuse him from what's already transpired. If, in fact, the whole thing is frustrated, the conspiracy and the object is ended, then there's no crime at all.
Well, what about the situation where one of the conspirators, you know, has second thoughts about the whole thing and comes into the police?
It's covered in Section 11.
If the police stop it...
And the police aren't able to stop it. Like,
too bad.
What's one of the accomplice cases where... it was a robbery case, I think, or something, where the girls went to the guy's room and then robbed him. And one of the guys backed out of the conspiracy, and although it wasn't a conspiracy case, and called the police. But the police weren't able to stop the robbery.
Now, well, this doesn't do him any good, but it would show abandonment on his part with respect to the statute of limitations running under Section 11, if that does him any good. He's still going to be guilty of what's transpired up to this point, but not for the crimes committed later by his cohorts. He's not only got to tell the police, the police have to stop it before there's a complete defense.
He shouldn't be responsible for what happened afterwards if he told the police all about it and they just weren't able to stop it.
That's right.
As a practical matter, he probably wouldn't be prosecuted for what happened.
Not in Benton County.
Not in Benton County, not.
He'd be your star witness.
Yeah.
He'd be granted immunity like that. George, let me ask you.
That's what we always do.
Do you reasonably anticipate that we can get through this evening, or should we?
Well, we're pretty close.
We've got about another four sections to go. Some of them are going to take some time, won't they?
Yeah, the last one is the related matter, the possession and so forth. We're going to have to hack that over pretty good because it's been sent to us by the full commission to talk about.
With respect to forgery, right.
And the grading, we've talked about it a little, but I don't think we've agreed by any means about it.
Well, I was wondering how late you wanted to run.
Well, I sure would like to quit before 9 o'clock. I thought we kind of agreed to do that.
Yeah, well, I'm satisfied we're not going to get through the whole thing by 9. And do you want to run until 8:30 and then quit, or what? Frankly, I'm getting tired. That's bringing up.
The remaining four sections would be about right for another meeting, wouldn't they?
Yeah, we could then.
We've got. Why don't we leave the remaining four sections for the next meeting? I hate to throw in the towels early, but I'll tell you, I'm bushed.
Oh, I'm getting pushed too. I've been in since 7 this morning.
You want to talk about the next meeting date?
I just assume. I think it's better.